We're 383, right?
Yes.
I guess. Hey, you're the host.
I'll make it whatever episode I want. Good evening, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 383. I am your host, James Jones, here to point out that threes are just eights that have had pieces bitten off. Joining me today is Mr. John Lindemann.
I have to say, that Mario Kart 8, that game is a 9.5 out of 10, but I haven't even played it. I just know.
Jesus Christ. Save me, Guillaume Veillette.
I can't believe that Joan would be so biased as to give it less than 10 out of 10.
Save me, Curtis Bonds!
You fucked up, John.
Perfect. Great. So, Curtis is joining us in place of the erstwhile Dr. Jonathan Metz, who will be back next week. And as tradition would dictate, Kurt, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you've been playing?
I've been playing quite a few things. I have been playing Disney Magical World.
I'm going to pause you for a second.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to guess a lot of our listeners don't know what that game is. So
yeah, just please pretend that I know nothing about this game except the title.
Okay, it is Animal Crossing action game in a fake Disneyland. So I don't know if that sells anybody on that alone.
Wait. Oh, God, you're, like, describing Six Flags Fun Park.
No, it's a little better than that, I would suppose.
That's not saying much.
Yeah, so take that with what you will.
Okay.
You know what? I saw this game, like, a while ago, just some random Japanese trailer that I saw, and I thought it looked interesting, but nothing that really, like, kind of jumped out at me. It's just like, oh, I don't know if this will ever leave Japan. And all of a sudden, a few months ago, Nintendo announced that they were bringing it to the States and they were publishing it.
Right.
Like, so who made this game?
Namco Bandai made this game. I believe, let me look up who
I am in the process.
Actually developed it. I think it was Han that developed it. The people that made The World Ends With You, I don't know. I'm...
I'll look it up, but this was originally a Namco joint, and then Nintendo...
it was published by Namco Bandai in Japan, and I guess they don't want to be bothered to publish a Disney game over here for whatever reason, so Nintendo decided to pick it up. And, I gotta say, this is, I honestly don't even know if I like this game or not, to be honest. Because I am a big fan of games like Animal Crossing. Like, I know a lot of people think it's a bit mundane, you know, doing, you know, these little chores for all these little villagers and stuff. But I don't know. I did get a sense of reward when playing that game. Like, I felt like I was actually progressing and doing, you know, making my town just that much more lively and beautiful by, you know, helping out all these people and just upgrading my house and getting all this fun stuff to decorate the town with. And this is, this is kind of similar in concept of just helping people out, but you don't really get, like, a sense of progression or improvement of where you are. Cause you're put in this place called Castleton, which is just like just looks and feels like a very miniature version of Disneyland, except no rides, so I don't know why you would want to go there. you start out just like helping out characters like Minnie and Goofy and Mickey and Donald and Daisy, and you know, you gradually figure out how to do things. The tutorial is extremely in depth and very long. Like I was worried that this whole game was gonna be basically a glorified tutorial about an hour into it, I was actually given free rein to pretty much do whatever I wanted. So point is to, go to all these different worlds. I've only unlocked maybe about four, different worlds. There's one based on Winnie the Pooh. There's one based on Aladdin. One based on, Cinderella and one based on Alice in Wonderland. So you can go to all these different worlds and do these, you know, little missions. And to help, you know, some of the characters, like the Mad Hatter needs a special tea leaf or something, and, you know, you go and
special
talk to him.
Special tea leaf.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, you know, that on birthday party is not going to get started itself. But, yeah, it's... So that's like one portion of the game where you go and help out these characters, but when you help out these characters, it kind of switches from like kind of a life sim to like an action game, kind of reminiscent of maybe Kingdom Hearts, only way less complex.
It's funny you mentioned this traveling to Disney Worlds and Kingdom Hearts like style, because Hand, H-A-N-D, Inc. Company, who made this game, also known as Disney Magical Castle, My Happy Life, also made the World Ends With You.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
365 divided by 2. And they made the World Ends With You iOS remake, apparently.
Oh, okay.
They have a interesting history of
just
Japanese games.
Yeah. So yeah. Like all the action segments are just a very, very, very kind of basic action game. You just wander around these randomly generated kind of areas, and you just kind of bat your wand at all the enemies that kind of spawn up. And along the way, you'll just, you know, gather random items that you'll need to to make clothes. You also run a cafe. I probably forgot to mention that.
Sure.
Yeah, so yeah, not only are you a grand wizard, you also run a cafe and you play dress up as well. So it's just like
just another day in the office.
There is nothing wrong with that.
Not at all. I wasn't saying there was anything.
Be clear.
Wrong.
I'm just gonna say.
So yeah, it's so the point I was trying to make earlier about it not feeling as like rewarding or feeling accomplished and. In comparison to like Animal Crossing is just like I just don't care about any of these characters in this game. Like
which is a hard sell in a Disney game.
I know, which was one of the main disappointments for me, cuz like I would consider myself a pretty big Disney fan. Like I love, you know, I love all the classic Disney movies and all these characters. I love Mickey and Donald and all them. But it's just they have just been written so like blandly that it's just like it's hard for me to really give,
like, they just don't feel like the characters.
Yeah, exactly. They just feel like a Disney NPC. They all just feel like NPCs. So
a
it's
new
like,
life awaits you in the magical world of Disney. Meet and interact with over 60 of your favorite Disney characters while exploring the worlds of Alice in Wonderland, Cinderella, Aladdin, and Winnie the Pooh. You can manage your own cafe filled with Disney magic and set off on ghost hunting quests. Your life becomes the adventure.
Yeah, if the adventure is just talking to people that don't feel like they're the actual people, then yeah, that's quite an adventure.
Maybe they're the ghosts.
Maybe. You know,
I apologize for butting in, but that had to get read.
You know, maybe they're the nobodies from Kingdom Hearts.
Brand
maybe
synergy.
they all got killed, and this is they're nobodies, and they just took their form.
This is secretly Kingdom Hearts 3, is what you're saying.
Shit. I don't know, but yeah.
It seems like it looks the part. Like
it looks great when it wants to look great.
Uh oh.
It's because like when you go out on these quests and you defeat all the monsters and stuff, it looks fine. Like the frame rate is just silky smooth. It runs at like 30 frames a second, and it's fun to look at. It's just very colorful, and it pops a lot, and the music is really catchy too. But it's just like, for whatever reason, when you're in kind of like in the main Castleton area, it's just like the frame rate just gets cut in half. So it's just it's kind of disappointing in that regard. Especially when there's like, you know, you unlock sparkles in this game. One of the unlockables is sparkles that just trail behind your character. And it's just like...
It's like an old JavaScript add-on to a website, then.
Exactly, yeah. Just moving the mouse around. Welcome to my A-Team MIDI website.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
But yeah, it's just like, I feel like everything in that whole hub area just bogs the entire game down.
So do sparkles have some point besides destroying the frame rate?
Not really. It's just flare. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of like balloons going on in the background. There's, you know, you get all the sparkles falling around you, and it's kind of disappointing, but it's still charming in like a PlayStation 1 kind of way.
Oh.
So it's like, I don't know if that even makes sense, but.
It does.
Okay, good. And yeah, it's, even though I have so many like kind of issues with like the personalities of the characters and kind of the mundane tasks that you have to do, like you have to gather so many apples to get this ingredient to, like, you know, make a Cinderella dress, which is what I'm currently rocking right now.
It's good luck.
Yeah, I definitely needed it
because apples are used to make dresses.
Yeah, there's so many. Yeah, there are so many just weird
Her
combinations.
Her carriage was a pumpkin. Come on.
It was transformed by magic!
Well, exactly, you're playing
you
a wizard.
Soulless man!
Jesus Christ.
Don't step on the fairy godmother.
Seriously, man.
I'm sorry.
it's quite alright. But yeah, it's... Like, I have so many issues with that, but at the same time, it's just like I still feel compelled to keep playing this game because it runs in real time, kind of like Animal Crossing, but it doesn't like punish you for not playing like for days at a time. Like there are things that happen like in certain amounts of time, like you can plant some vegetables, fruits, and flowers in the garden in Winnie the Pooh, and you can come back like an hour later and they'll grow, but it's just like. There's nothing like really punishing you for getting there late, unless you like take on a task and like some of these tasks are like timed, like you have 8 hours to complete it, you know, because sometimes it takes a while to harvest certain vegetables or flowers and stuff that you need for certain quests, so they'll just give you like 8 hours to do it, and if you don't do it, it just clears out. It doesn't really punish you. It'll eventually come back up, but it's crack, you know. This game is just Disney crack.
Oh yeah, it is a game that is actively incentivizing you for not playing it. Is what you're telling me.
Yeah,
it is telling you, okay, go do this, put the game down, and come back in 2 hours.
Exactly, and it's just like it. The more I play it, like the more, like it'll give me more stuff. As it goes on, like, I feel compelled to get all that stuff, even though, like, there's no punishment for not getting it in time. And it's just like, it just feels...
What's the end game here? I mean...
You know what? I honestly don't know if there is one.
Well, I assume that there's a Tom Nook figure in there that you have to give all your money to, but maybe that would be too honest from Disney.
Yeah, that would be too. That'd be too upfront. Yeah.
No, there's nobody you have to give money to. Like, you pretty much get to keep all the money you make from like the cafe and selling all the stuff and, you know, getting all the items and trading everything. It's just like as you go on, you unlock all these stickers, and depending on how many stickers you have, you unlock a new either a new world or more recipes to make different furniture and clothes, or yeah, just different things
to
like that.
To make different furniture and clothes for your cafe.
Exactly.
What kind of economy is running in this Disney world?
I don't know, but those Disney dollars are banging, I'll tell you that. Shoot.
Oh, man. All right, I'm going to save you from yourself.
Yeah.
What else have you been playing this week?
I've been playing Kirby Triple Deluxe. I actually just beat it last night. And, that game is just so Kirby.
It is.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Kirby Triple Deluxe is a damn fine Kirby game. I mean, I feel like it's a little on the easier side compared to something like Return to Dreamland. Like it's a little more forgiving when it comes to like you know, in every Kirby game, there's always these little collectibles like that add an extra challenge to the game. And you know, so in games like Return to Dreamland, you pretty much only get one shot to get some of these, you know, extra little collectibles, and if you mess it up, you have to restart the level.
Right.
But it, for the most part, in Triple Deluxe, they pretty much offer you every single chance available to get what they call the Sunstones in this game. And, yeah, I mean, it's so, it's the first, like, maybe four worlds, it can be a little easy, and it just, it's, but, as it ramps up, it gets a little more difficult, especially, the final boss, which I won't really spoil, but it's just like, it's probably the most intense boss fight I've ever faced in a Kirby game since, like, Kirby's Adventure.
I don't even know how to quantify that statement.
Well, Kirby bosses tend to be pretty easy if you know kind of the trick, mm-hmm. you know, because you can just wail on the boss, keep wailing on them until they die.
You've got so much energy that you can just ram into it, and it's gonna hurt him more than it's gonna hurt you. Like, it doesn't matter mm-hmm. how badly you play, you're still gonna survive.
Exactly. And in this game, the boss fights are actually a little more complex than that, because you can't always hit the enemies. Like, they'll actually, for once, move out of the way.
Yeah, they make use of the 3D thing by having the bosses move in the background very often, and then they attack mm-hmm. you from there, and then they don't give you that many opportunities to hurt them.
Exactly. So yeah, they'll like, you know, kind of zoom off into the background, then they'll eventually come back up. So it extends the boss fight a little bit, and it actually makes it a bit tougher because, you know, they're attacking you from so far behind and you have no way to attack them while they're doing it. So you just can't like kind of wail on them and go. So yeah, that's definitely, one of my favorite aspects of the game compared to past Kirby games. Just like the boss battles are way more challenging and way a little more intense too. Especially that final one, like I said earlier. I won't spoil anything. But yeah. Damn good game.
All right. John.
Yes, so...
You've made a purchasing decision that now seems a little bit weird.
I guess. I mean, it really didn't have anything to do with current events.
Well, no. Timing of it ends up seeming a little bit weird.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah. It's kind of mm-hmm. strange. But anyways, I saw an Xbox One for cheap on eBay. It was a refurbished one, so I got it for $380 with Kinect, which apparently became an issue after I bought it. it became a big deal having Kinect in the box, but
not having Kinect in the box became a big deal. Let's put it that way.
Yep, so got that. I also got Ghosts and Titanfall. I actually just got Titanfall today. I just picked it up from the mailbox and installed it. So it's kind of my first impressions. I'm not going to, you know, go on too long
about it. Let's
talk
about the hardware. Let's talk about the experience you have with the system.
Pretty good so far. I mean, the big thing, obviously, Kinect has been the big topic this week, whether or not, you know, how useful it is, kind of weighing it versus the gamepad and everything.
For the purpose of historical reflection, if someone's listening to this in 4 years, the Xbox One launched at $100 more than the PS4, mm-hmm. but included the Kinect version too. This week, Microsoft announced they were going to release a unit price the same as the PS4, but without the Kinect.
Yeah, so they've decoupled it. So, and the question has always been with Kinect, well, you know, what does it actually bring to the whole package, right? And,
Microsoft kind of worked their whole user interface to work with Kinect. Like, there's a lot of functions that take 18 button presses if you're using a controller.
It's okay. Microsoft's gotten real used to changing their the core identity of their user experience in the last couple years.
Mm-hmm. And that was hard enough on the latest Xbox 360 dashboard.
Yeah.
They really started to punish you for not having a Kinect.
Oh, yeah. Boy. You wind up, you know, kind of doing a lot of click-through on their current interface. That's why I like Kinect. I mean, it's certainly not, I mean, it's, I think, its detractors would say that it's useless and, you know, it was dumb to include it in the box. I think it was dumb to include it in the box if it added $100 to the price, because it's certainly not worth $100. But I can tell you that since I have it, if you have it, you're going to use it, because the voice commands are actually very handy to navigate the menu and the interface. It's very simple. The voice commands are easy. You know, Xbox select, and then everything on the screen highlights in green, and whatever word is on the screen, you say it, and it goes there. So it's very simple. It's well done. I mean, you have to make sure that, you know, you speak clearly and all that kind of stuff.
You speak American.
Yeah, exactly. You got to make sure to have the right accent and be the right nationality.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, just There's certainly overhead for it, that's for sure.
I mean, we tolerate John here enough that the Kinect is apparently willing to accept his degree of Americanness. So
it is.
God
it
bless.
Is. Yep. Yep. It's I'm
God's
sure on,
own country.
I'm sure on the 4th of July.
God
have,
and Kinect's own country.
It'll email me a gift or something, but yeah, so, you know, I'm pretty pleased with this so far. You know, a couple of wrinkles. Certainly the amount of space that stuff takes up on disk is an issue. I mean, right out of the gate, it has a 500 gig hard drive, but you start out with 365 gigs free. So, you know, it takes up, I mean, the OS that's on this thing takes up 140 gigs plus.
That's ridiculous.
Is ludicrous. So, and the thing is too, you have to install every game. So right now I have Ghosts installed, and Ghosts is a massive install. It takes up, and I don't think that the number on there actually includes the DLC, but just the install, the base install of the game is 41 gigs. So, and Titanfall out of the box is, I think, 16 gigs.
How long did it take to install Ghosts?
To install Ghosts, it took a long time. I mean, I'm talking like 20 minutes long. It took a while to install
so
that.
So it's mandatory installs on the Xbox One.
Yeah, I have physical discs for both of them, and you put it in, and it starts installing. So the only thing that the disc is there for is just to do the check to make sure that
it's a live CD key.
Yep. So yeah, and actually, what's interesting, you know, and I think this is part and parcel with having it installed on the disc and having the Xbox One read everything off the disc is with Ghosts, because I have Ghosts. I originally bought it for Xbox 360. So I was like, well, you know, I figured if I would get an Xbox One, all of my DLC, if I bought Ghosts for it, if I could find Ghosts cheap, I got Ghosts for like $30. All your DLC carries over. So I was like, okay, you know, I'll buy Ghosts and all my DLC carries over, which is pretty cool. But the interesting thing is, I was able to weigh the user experiences with both games side by side. And the interesting thing about the Xbox 360 version of the game is that when you go into the multiplayer menus, you know, you can choose between the three different modes. But going between those, there's no load times or anything like that. You just go in between them. You can go back and forth with menus, no problem. On Xbox One, there's actually like a load screen going back and forth between those menus. I think that's because it's reading off of the disc.
Oh,
so I boot up the game, and of course, first thing I do is go on Xbox Live, and a load screen comes up. I mean, there's no progress bar or anything. It's just, you know, a splash screen comes up, and I'm like, what the hell is this thing doing? And it's actually a quite sizable load time. I'd say about maybe seconds-wise, maybe 10 seconds, maybe a little bit more than that. And that happens every single time you go back and forth between the main multiplayer menu and, like, squads mode or just normal multiplayer mode or, like, the alien kind of horde mode. And it does that every single time, and that must be because it's loading off of the hard drive instead of directly off the disc like it would be on 360.
Well, the disc should be slower than the hard drive. It must be that the 360 can throw menu stuff into memory.
I don't know. Now what I'd be curious to see how it behaves on the PS4 and how it behaves on PC.
Yeah.
And
I would
probably
think
better.
On PC it definitely throws the whole menu system into local memory.
Yeah, and also on PC, I mean, with PC obviously you could have faster hard drives. I mean,
right.
I'm sure this hard drive is not very fast on Xbox One.
No, this is not a solid-state drive.
No, not by any means. But so that was disappointing. I think now the game itself plays better. It doesn't look leaps and bounds better than it does on 360.
Right, it's an upport.
Yeah, it's an upport. You know, it looks sharper. It plays smoother. Now, one thing I do like a lot more than 360 is the controller. The controller is much, much better. The sticks feel more precise. It just – and the controller is smaller. It's just much better. It feels much better to play. I mean, just playing the two games, playing Ghosts on 360 and playing it on Xbox One, I much prefer it on Xbox One just because
I've heard a lot of real positive. I mean, the 360 controller is great. I mean,
yeah.
it was leaps and bounds of the excluding the Wii's base controller. You give it the Class Control Pro for the best benefit. It was leaps and bounds the best controller of last generation.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah, I still have a wired 360 controller hooked up to my PC for any game that I need a gamepad for, and it's just worked perfectly.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, I'm really impressed by it. And you know, what's interesting is that I did play Xbox One when it came through, when they were doing their Xbox tour, like, last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't impressed with the controller. I was like, eh, whatever, because I played Forza with it, and I just wasn't really that impressed. But now that I've actually played a first-person shooter with it, I actually like it a lot more than I used to. So, yeah, and you know, I downloaded all the apps, that I wanted, you know, Twitch. I haven't streamed anything on Twitch yet. But I'm pretty pleased with it. I mean, it does a lot of the same stuff that the Xbox 360 does. Obviously, I can't take advantage of any of like the TV functionality or any of that kind of expanded functionality, but it just doesn't feel like, I think that Nintendo really dropped the ball in the way that they introduced this thing. They focused way too much on the non-game stuff because, I mean, all that like TV kind of stuff, it's sort of out of the way. It's on your dashboard, but I mean, it's,
okay,
you're not
so when
touch
you said,
it,
you said Nintendo, you know? You meant Microsoft?
Yeah, oh, sorry, Microsoft, say. Yeah. Microsoft, right. I should say that, Microsoft really kind of dropped the ball when they introduced this because there's a lot of stuff that is really on the side and it's not really up in your face. The TV stuff is not up in your face. I mean, it's on your dashboard, but you're never going to touch it if you don't have it. I mean, so to kind of put that front and center, I don't know.
When they had that initial kind of announcement event thing, it's just, I just looked at the whole thing and I was just like, there's nothing that I want here.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I was just off ship pretty early on that.
Mm. Now, John, did you, I don't know, like, did you have to choose between a PC and an Xbox One, or was it always like, oh, this is what I want because, I don't know, because it's cheaper up front, or?
No, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I no longer have a desktop PC for gaming, right. But I just use my laptop for that, so that was never a consideration of mine or an issue.
Okay.
I was just always curious more about the hardware. I was more curious about the Xbox One hardware than I was about the PS4. With the PS4, I feel like it's kind of, I pretty much know exactly what I'm getting, or I feel like it. I feel like it's just a souped up PS3 with Twitch streaming right out of the box. And there's really not, I mean, games wise, you know, Titanfall really was the only thing coming out of, you know, the E3 when it was announced that really kind of caught my eye. So I've always been interested to play it. And since, you know, I don't think my laptop would probably, you know, play it as well as I'd like it to be played.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's one of the benefits of like having a desktop PC. Cause I recently upgraded my video card. I got, things that NVIDIA 750 Ti, and I think it was like $150. And I mainly got it because apparently it came out that $150 card like doesn't require like any kind of external power and runs Titanfall better than the Xbox One can.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So it's just like, I got Titanfall on the PC for pretty much that reason.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, you know, side by side, of course, PC looks better, but I think that's pretty much the case in everything if you have the right hardware.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, but yeah, I mean, you know, for this, I mean, I knew at some point I'd buy an Xbox One to, like, you know, play the next Halo game. So it's, you know, just like I'll.
And
I'll,
that's not coming to PC, probably.
No.
Probably not. If it's taken them this long to put out a Halo game, period, on PC, it's just like, I don't think anything else is coming.
No.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing. I think it makes more sense for them. It has more value for them to keep it only on Xbox One now so they can sell Xbox One since it kind of needs some help. But yeah, I mean, overall, I'm happy with it. It's kind of what I expected. You know, I will say the one surprise was that, you know, Kinect, I was kind of like, yeah, whatever, the voice commands, But when I actually learned them and started using them, they were really cool. The gesture commands, I just don't really have the proper sized room to actually do that. But I mean, they're so superfluous. Like, do I really need to press forward to select something on the screen? No.
Yes.
It's just so much of that, like, motion control bullshit. Like, motion control is cool, but it adds so much overhead to something that you could just do with a controller.
Yeah.
It's just something I would never use.
I was having fun messing around with a friend's Xbox, and I had never really used Kinect menus, and I think I subscribed him to Xbox Music or whatever the service is.
Oh,
totally by accident.
You are no longer his friend.
Yeah. So, it's cool. I mean, I'm going to be playing. I just actually, you know, I said I just got Titanfall, so I'm going to be playing that, I'm sure, and checking that out, so.
Yeah, you'll have a blast, trust me on that.
Yeah, people have said that definitely it's the one I need to check out. I mean, you know, I enjoy Ghosts.
I mean,
a lot of people hate
not,
Ghosts, but I enjoyed it.
It's not going to be freaking Dead Rising 3.
No.
Cool. All right, so Guillaume.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
What am I doing?
Life?
That's, Maybe we'll get to that later in the future episode.
We'll get that to set during the drunk episode of RFN.
Yeah, the drunk existential episode.
Stay tuned for that.
But yeah, no, this week I've been pretty frugal. I have not bought a $400 console. Instead, I invested $2 into Tepengo, which was on sale on the 3DS eShop. And Tepengo is this game that I kind of... There was a buzz when it came out on my Twitter feed for some reason. And I think that a lot of people saw that it kind of looks like Picross. And that's where like everyone was kind of excited for it. It's developed by Goodbye Galaxy Games, which is basically one guy, as far as I know, Hugo Smits, who sometimes posts on the NWR forums. And I think basically... all the forums, all the Nintendo forums, because that's his marketing. And, yeah, so, you know, at a glance, it looks like Picross, but here what you do is that you've got these, you know, these pixels, with numbers on them, like 1, 2, 3, 7, whatever. And the number on them indicates how many, pixel it can stretch out to, and extend to a line. And what you have to do is, and this line, like when you extend a pixel by touching it with the stylus and then swiping left, right, up or down, and the line will extend until it reaches an obstacle. And so you have to extend these pixels in the right order to kind of, you know, like to block certain lines from becoming too big. And I understand it's probably hard to picture, but perhaps look at a trailer. It's really not as complicated as it sounds, and it's all about building a picture pixel by pixel, just like, you know, just like Picross. So I was pretty excited to get that for $2. But you know, like I played the first couple of puzzles in it. There's 104 in total. So I played like the first 10, and I was like, oh yeah, this is pretty cool. And then I played the next 10, and I was like, yeah, it's still pretty cool. And then I kept going, and there's basically, it never really gets more complex. The gameplay, the puzzles will get bigger, and they'll take longer to complete. But basically, once you've figured out the main strategies, you really don't have to think about it anymore. It just becomes automatic. And unlike Picross, where you can really get stumped and really have to, you know, like sometimes you're just like pulling your hair thinking like, what did I miss? Like there's got to be something that I missed somewhere. There's got to be a space where I didn't correctly, guess that this, you know, I couldn't put anything here and like the, anyway, like Picross is pretty hard, is what I'm saying. In this game,
yeah.
I don't know. Like I finished the early puzzles in maybe a minute, and by early I mean like the first 30 ones, and then I just skipped ahead and I went with the last one. And sure, it took me longer, but it was not any more difficult. So yeah, it's a game that gives a good first impression and that would appeal to Picross fans, but then doesn't really hold up. Yeah, it's just, if, even though I got it for very cheap, given that there's what, like four downloadable Picross games on the eShop?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I would probably go with one of those. But, you know, like perhaps some people find Picross too difficult or, I don't know. Like,
or maybe they find Picross 2 not enough Picross.
2 not enough Picross. Sure. Maybe yeah. You've played all the Picrosses already.
Maybe you have Picrossed everything.
Exactly. and you
have crossed all the picks.
And you need your methadone.
Need a fix.
Your
need a fix. Methadone. Yes, you need your downloadable methadone.
Exactly. So maybe
most
this...
popular app on the eShop, downloadable yeah. Methadone.
So yeah, Tepengo could be a good choice, but it just... For $2, I can't really complain, but, well, here I am anyway, complaining that it's a little bit too easy.
You're offering criticism.
Oh, yeah.
How dare you?
That's how we call it in the biz.
You fucked up.
That's so unprofessional. So unprofessional. It's the most unprofessional opinion I've ever heard on this podcast.
I can't stand all this negativity on this podcast.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
How dare you be so misogynistic?
I'm sorry.
Topinga was my favorite Boy Meets World character.
Oh boy.
I have.
And we're back to Disney.
Yeah, I'm kind of.
All right, let's move on.
Sure.
See what else you've been playing?
I've played another $2 game, and this one wasn't even on sale. It's just naturally $2 because it's naturally pretty damn cheap. The game is Abyss. It came out in the Wii U eShop last week, and it's actually, believe it or not, a port of a DSiWare game. It's from.
I can believe it.
Yeah, it's from our friends at EnjoyUp. And again, that's a very small studio. I'm pretty sure that this Julio person who sends us the press releases is also the main designer and programmer. So I don't know. I think that EnjoyUp is based somewhere in Europe, in Italy or something like that, I would assume, with a name like Julio. And Julio.
Julio,
I'm sorry. And so yeah,
it's
like the game Abyss actually is pretty damn cool, but it's kind of scratching a very specific itch that I had. I wanted to play a game where you have to navigate mazes and where the gravity is constantly pulling you down, and you have to steer a ship and you know constantly tap A and try to you know send your ship in the right arc to make it through these mazes. And you know what? This turned out to be exactly like that. It's that very specific kind of gameplay that I don't know. I've wanted to revisit ever since PAX East, where I played this Genesis game called Subterranea, which is a shooter where you know, like you're constantly fighting gravity. It's pulling you down at all times, and it makes it very challenging to control your ship. But it's also I don't know, kind of addictive and a lot of fun, in my opinion. But Abyss is not a shooter. It's just basically an obstacle course. And, I mentioned mazes, but the 12 missions in the game are really not mazes. They're just, straight from point A to point B. And, they introduce moving platforms, moving obstacles only maybe like, 8 missions into the game. So it really takes a long time to ramp up. I'm not saying that it's easy. It's very challenging. You have to really be careful not to touch the walls or you take damage. And after you've touched the walls one time, your ship glows red for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 seconds. And if you touch a wall again during that period, then it's game over and you have to start over. But yeah, like it's very difficult. You have to be quick because you're racing against time, or at least you're, you know, against a leaderboard. And I don't know, there's something really satisfying about it. The only problem is that it is a budget game, and it really shows. The game is not much of a looker.
It's DSiWare port, I mean.
Yeah, like they did put a couple of cool effects, and it's not like the resolution is 64x128, you know. It doesn't look like much, and more problematic, I think, is that it's very short. The first few missions you can complete in about a minute, and there's 12 of them, and then you unlock 8 more, but they're not really that much more difficult, and then there's a kind of a mission mode where, like some sort of endurance mode where you go through the whole thing, in one go and try to beat your scores. And so this game is all about time trials, except that there's no effort put into making the player care about his time. You know, like there's default leaderboards with, you know, the classic 3-letter space for your name and, you know, like the time next to it. And it's already populated by times, but the times will be always like about 6 minutes. And as I said, you can very easily complete the first stage the first time in about a minute or two.
Maybe, Guillaume, maybe this is online and you're just the best player at Abyss in history.
No. No, because I did go to the Miiverse community and people are just, you know, posting their times, posting screenshots of our times, which is really not that satisfying. I kind of feel like, you know, I understand that this game was developed on a budget and they can't really do everything, but it seems to me like the very least they could have done is put some sort of medal system to push people.
Some kind of visual indicator that you did a good job versus you did a poor job, you should be ashamed.
Right. Well, like, the thing is, if you only base, if you only compare yourself to the leaderboards that they already included, you're already doing a super great job. You know, you're already going...
You're the best!
Yeah, you're already going, around. Like, 300% faster.
Put you down. It's enjoy up.
Oh, I see. It's their mission yeah. statement.
From the fine people who made Penguin and Friends, hey, that's my fish.
Oh,
don't
wow.
ask me why I know that. I just do. Fact check me.
But yeah, like something to shoot for would have been nice. As it is, it's bare bones. But it's the gameplay is really cool. I mean, I really enjoy playing it. And I should have looked this up earlier, but I did play through the game and got the ending screen, and as I said, it's cheap and these guys are not native English speakers, so apparently I saved in Earth or something. Like, it's now possible to live in Earth. So I was like, I posted on the Miiverse, oh hey, I'm a hero, now we can all live in Earth. And actually Julio
got
showed up
from the Miiverse.
Actually, Julio showed up on the in that post and said, "Oh, congratulations, thank you." And I was just, "Oh, I'm sorry, I was making fun of you, but you can't even tell, you know, I was making fun of your typo, but now I just feel like a jackass."
I'll take that burden from you and be the podcast resident jackass, because this week I made a decision that is probably reprehensible mm-hmm. by going into the 3DS eShop not knowing what I wanted to do when I got there.
Oh boy.
Oh man. This is like, going shopping for food and being hungry.
Which is a hodgepodge of games that really have no reason to be on a virtual console,
mm-hmm.
games that have no reason to be on a portable virtual console, and games that really just had no reason to be.
Aww.
And I ended up with a old classic, Legend of the River King,
nice.
For the Game Boy Color, which at the very least should be on a portable virtual console, so we're in good shape as it is. Mm. If you don't know, Legend of the River King, it is the third River King game, which is a game about fishing, and it is a game developed by, you love this one, Victor Interactive Software,
okay,
a Japanese company that ultimately went through an incredible number of mergers, finally ending up as part of Marvelous Entertainment.
Okay. It sounds like a Windows 95 software developer.
It does sound like a Windows 95 software. So they were actually a division of Victor Entertainment, if you know that name.
Now, is this similar to the Black Bastards? Is this... I'm trying
no,
to think.
God, no.
Okay.
So, other things Victor Interactive Software, or at least their post... Well, it's some iteration of them, are responsible for is working on the Harvest Moon games.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Natsume, the US publisher of the Harvest Moon games, also published this title. So if you're wondering, does it bear anything in common with the Harvest Moon games? No, because those games tell you what the hell you're supposed to be doing.
I think Victor also did a lot of TurboGrafx-16 games.
They did some TurboGrafx-16 games.
Yes.
Including a River King TurboGrafx-16 game.
Oh, there
so
it
I
is.
Was gonna
Circle
I was
of Life
is complete.
I was
going to come in here and go, you know what? It was the first game because there is a sequel in Game Boy Color. Whatever, you know, they didn't know what the hell they were doing. No, this is the third River King game, which means they knew what they were doing. They just didn't give a shit. So here's how it starts out. Your sister is sick. You wake up and your sister is sick. And your mother is telling you, you need to go catch this fish, that will make her not sick. That is pretty much the plot of this game. You need to go catch a fish that will make her not sick.
Well, that sounds simple enough.
Yeah, and you look in your inventory and you think, okay, I've got a fishing rod, I've got some bait, I've got some hooks, I'm gonna go catch that fish. The game will be over in about 5 minutes. And so you go out to, you walk south from the town, there's a couple buildings, and you hit the river, and then the world ends. And you think, oh, alright, well, this is where I'm gonna fish then. And you start fishing, and then you can't catch anything, because no fish want to come to your hook. When they do come to your hook, a confusing minigame plays where the camera dives underwater and you see the fish from a side perspective, and if you try to reel it in, as you would when you fish, it breaks away and goes off.
Now, when you were first describing that, when you said And he said, and then the world ends. Like, it was just some nonchalant thing. I had a very different image of, in my mind of what kind of fishing game this was.
My quest to find the guardian fish for my sister does not allow me to go beyond, essentially, the river.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a bridge. I can cross it. But then immediately after I leave the banks of the river, everything stops.
Gotcha.
You cannot proceed any further. There are other areas that you can go to by completing these quests that mostly involve you catching... Stop me if you guess this one. A fish.
Oh.
What?
So,
that's kind of convenient.
So, I go into town, and nobody's telling me anything. So, I'm trying to figure out what to do. And I've gone through a bunch of bait where the fish would grab the bait, and then I would try to reel it in, and they'd break off and they'd escape. And I go, well, how am I supposed to catch you if I can't reel you in? So, I started abusing the save state system because I was running out of bait. And I need money to buy bait, and I need fish to make money, which means eventually you could get to a point where your game save is completely unsalvageable because you have no money, no bait, and no fish, which is awesome. But
that's
so
beautiful design right there.
At the very, very edge of the area you can explore, not like right in front of your house, you meet a guy called G.Dad, which it took me a while to figure out what that meant. That was because the game is so Japanese, they didn't bother to expand the name field, accounting for the fact that we don't have kanji. This is actually your granddad. So, he tells me, you want to know the secret about fishing? And your character responds, yeah, I need to know the secret about fishing. And he goes, go catch me a fish. And I'm like, you know what, game? I'm done. I have to catch you a fish. So you will tell me how to fish. This isn't some fucking parable from Jesus.
You want to learn how to drive? Go catch me a car.
This isn't some New Testament stuff. Just tell me how to fish. So eventually, by abusing the save state system and experimentation, I figured out the way to fish is to reel in when the fish is not trying to escape.
Right.
Sure.
Hmm.
Okay. But sometimes the fish will just escape if you wait for him to not try to escape. He'll just keep swimming and he's gone.
Sounds logical.
So the save state system is being heavily abused at this point.
Mm.
And I'm trying to find the very specific fish he wants me to catch for him. Because it's not just any fish. We're in Animal Crossing world where there's tons of fishes. But unlike that, you can't even see where the fish are until you put your lure in the water. Let alone what type of fish they are. So I finally get the fish he's looking for. I bring it to him, and he goes, cool, you got me a fish. The secret to fishing is being patient. And tutorial.
That's pretty deep.
So at this point, I've thought, okay, maybe my quest is to get this jerk a fish, and then I can proceed with the story. And I'm like, I just want to catch the guardian fish. That's all I need to do. So that's it. Nothing happens. I'm like, oh. Well, let's check the other edge of the game world. So I go over there. It's a couple-minute hike because everything in this game, including the music, is at half speed. And so I'm walking very slowly to the other end of the world, and I meet a guy there who says, hey, you want a raft? I'll make you a raft. I'm like, oh, this sounds like plot, but you got to catch me a rainbow trout. Fine. I go find the rainbow trout, which takes a couple fish that aren't rainbow trout for me to find them. Another 30 minutes. Catch the rainbow trout.
Now, this is a Game Boy Color game, right?
Yes, okay. This is a Game Boy Color game.
Okay.
The rainbow trout, by the way, has two colors. Just like a real rainbow. The regular trout has two colors. They are slightly different. So I catch his rainbow trout. I catch some other fish that I sell for money to buy bait because I'm down to one worm. And he goes, cool. Go get my lunch from my daughter, and I'll make you a raft. I'm like, what? So I wander around and find a house not in town that happens to be his house. There's no indication of it. She just goes, oh, my dad sent you to get my food. Keep in mind that in the world mode, where you're not fishing, everyone looks like an 8-bit version of the characters from Crayon Shin-chan. And she's like, go catch me a fish for dinner. I'm like, I'm not here for dinner. I'm just here for lunch. But I can't find that fish, so now I'm stuck at a point where I'm trying to find fish that won't get on the hook, and I can't keep buying bait. And this game has just destroyed any concept of fun.
So are there, like, any other, like, actual people fishing in this game. It just seems like...
There are a lot of people... It's like Pokemon. There are a lot of people talking about fishing.
Exactly. It's just like everybody seems to love fish.
So keep in mind that the story is that my sister, who for whatever reason still has a Japanese name, has fallen... I mean, this game is super Japanese, but regardless, has fallen really sick, and I need to catch the guardian fish. And apparently, my grandfather is this super respected fish who apparently doesn't give a crap about his grandkids. Because he's not going to teach you to fish to save his own granddaughter, and he sure as hell isn't going to bother to go catch this fish himself.
Again, I think you meant fisherman, not fish.
Yeah, I was going to say, your grandfather's a fish?
Sorry,
I think
fisherman.
We're tired
yes.
tonight.
So, I haven't even gotten to the weirdest part of this game yet. Yeah.
Oh,
this
boy.
Game has random battles.
What?
What are battles?
Yeah, like
battles.
When you're so, just walking you around? As you walk around, you get attacked.
By fish?
No. So I got attacked by a spider in a random battle. And not like a big giant spider, like a grass spider. And she said, you were attacked by spider. Great. So then I chose punch and I missed. I chose punch again and I missed. I chose punch again. I'm like, well, yeah, it's a grass spider. What do you expect?
Yeah, why are you punching a spider, dude?
But so a lot of times what the enemy's move is, the spider is staring at you. The spider is waiting. The spider's mind is blank. I'm like, he's not attacking, he's being a spider.
Exactly, just so, run away.
So I couldn't figure out how to beat up the spider, and it had gone into this like minute and a half of me missing and him being a spider. And then I realized that there's actually a little hand that shows up on screen when you pick the fight icon. And when I just sat there basically sobbing into my 3DS, begging River King to tell me how to play it, I noticed the hand actually bounces around the screen. The trick is to press the A button when the hand is over the character that you're trying to beat the ever-living crap out of.
Weird.
Very weird.
That's how it controls. Then it will say, you hit the spider with full force. Not as any force indicator.
Jeez.
Did 19 damage
you
the
broke,
spider.
You broke your experience. Hand on the ground.
So what's even weirder is that I had a 5-minute fight with a crow. And the crow literally did nothing, but the crow looks at you. The crow looks at you. And then finally the crow hit me. It took all of my health in one hit, and then I woke back up in the hotel. Never mind that I live in this town and have a place to stay already.
So what's the purpose of these battles? What do you get from them?
I don't know!
What do you get from them?
Like, I would think experience points or what?
I've gained experience points, but nothing's happened with it.
It's weird. Like, I would think that maybe you could get... Like, when you beat an enemy, you'd maybe be able to use them as bait or something. Like, put a spider on your line or something. Or, you know,
I'm going to throw this bird in the water as my bait.
Whatever.
And maybe,
whatever
maybe
it takes.
Maybe that's why everybody's asking you to get the fish for them, because they know you hate animals. You don't care.
Maybe everybody in this town is just nuts. Like nobody bothers to ask, like, why do you think a fish is going to make your sister not sick? They're busy telling you to go catch fish so they can for dinner, so they can make lunch. I mean, this game is messed up. If you, all right, here's the conditions I would suggest buying River King under. If you're really high, I mean, really, really out of your mind, like Busta Rhymes high. Go buy Legend of the River King, because it will make sense. Under no other circumstances should you consider buying Legend of the River King.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I remember when that game came out on the Virtual Console, and we were looking for people to review it, and it's just like, I don't even remember if anybody...
Consider it reviewed! Just cut this audio out and put it in an article, and we're done.
There we go.
Yeah, Legend of the River King.
Yeah, everyone was very apprehensive about wanting to touch this game.
It's just, the review is just the word what. No question mark, no period, just what. Not recommended. So yeah, on that bombshell, I'm going to go punch some spiders, and when we come back, we're going to have some interesting topics for discussion, I hope.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
All All right, and this week we have a preview of Pokemon or Pokemon Orange. Yeah, right.
Pokemon
Orange Island League confirmed.
A preview of Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire by Alex Galafi. Alex is excited about this new Pokemon installment. He says it himself. He actually says that right at the start of the preview. I am excited. Join him as he picks apart the announcement video and press release in a fashion that only a true Pokenut can.
Which is actually an item in Pokemon at this
point. I don't know about that.
I think it might actually be.
It's probably, yeah. All right, and we have a review of 3D Outrun by Don Koopman. While he admits that he hasn't been too enchanted with all of Sega's 3D classic re-releases, Don has to admit that he's pretty impressed with this new game in the series. Check out his review and find out if you could be the blonde sitting next to Don in the proverbial driver's seat.
That's misogynistic, John!
Even though there's no proverbs involved here, but I just
maybe
like
her hair
the word proverbial.
Is dyed, but that's nothing to talk about.
We have a feature, Nintendo Weekend Report by Curtis.
What?
Our own Curtis Bones takes to the YouTube airwaves to update us all on the weekly happenings in the world of Nintendo. In this case, the revolution will be televised. Moving on, we have a review for Mario Golf World Tour Mushroom DLC Pack on the 3DS by Neil Runahan. Nintendo's grand DLC experiment with Mario Golf begins, and Neil weighs in on whether or not they're on the right track. See if this DLC is for you, or if you should wait for the next installment.
Don't you mean if they're on the right course, John, or on the fairway, or on the green, or any other dumb pun you could have come up with?
I guess if you bought the season pack, you're fucked.
This whole section is subpar.
Oh.
Anyway, we got a review. We got two reviews by Dan and Neil for Mario Kart 8. Neil and Dan give their thoughts on the newest Wii U Mega release, and they are positively incendiary. I have never spoken that word in my life. is this the Wii U savior title that everybody has been waiting for? They don't think so, and rioting in the street has already ensued as a result. Hide your canned goods, stock up on water, and prepare for the apocalypse prior to reading these reviews. And we also have a review from our very own Guillaume for Child of Light. Guillaume knows rhymes. He is a monster on the Montreal MC Battle Circuit. And guess what? The rhymes in Child of Light don't hold up, and neither does its combat system. But I'll let Guillaume tell you about that in his review.
We have an editorial, Single Player to Multiplayer, The Evolution of Portable Mario Sports, by Neil. Ever wonder why Nintendo dropped the RPG elements that used to exist in classic Camelot-developed Mario sports games? Neil thinks he knows exactly why, and you should read this editorial to see if you agree. Lastly this week, we have a review, Moon Chronicles Episode 1 by Zach Miller. Zach loved the original Moon for Nintendo DS, so you know he was all over this 3DS remake. He updates us on exactly what is new and different in this remake, and whether or not the episode idea pans out. Anyway, all of this and more at NintendoWorldReport.com. And welcome back. We're not doing listener mail this week because I flubbed the opening. We just don't have enough emails that we wanted to cover this week. We've got some good ones. We wanted to have a couple more good ones before we rolled into another listener mail segment. And with E3 coming up, you guys can do better than that. So, do better than that next time.
Yeah, God.
The email address is rfn@attenderworldreport.com. Get on it. Instead, this week, we're going to talk about some feature topics that I've come up with and may or may not be very interesting. But stick around and find out with us, because we're going to find out right now, too.
We always make things interesting, James. It's
in
the
a
curse.
Good way?
Yeah, it's the burden that we bear.
Great.
Episode
so,
in, episode out.
Before John makes this worse, I'm gonna start it off. So, first topic this week I want to talk about. So, during the previous two investor briefings, Nintendo's spoken about initiatives involved in merchandising their brands in attempts to generate much needed hard currency. In the interim, they announced this sort of NFC figurines that will allow them to have rewritable data stored on the figurine that can interface with the Wii U gamepad and with some RF device that they're going to put out on for the 3DS. And that will in some way influence the games in question. So obviously the mind jumps to things like Skylanders and Disney Infinity.
Right.
Which, of course, all four of us here are experts on Skylanders and Disney Infinity.
Oh, don't I know it.
As we write for Skylanders Infinity WorldReport.com.
Absolutely.
But, to that end, gentlemen, I would like your thoughts on what merchandising Nintendo could do, because as Nintendo World Report's own Justin Berube can tell you, they already do quite a lot of it.
Yeah.
And B, why do we need figurines that save data for consoles that already save data internally?
Well, not only that, but I think more than merchandising, I'm kind of wondering if...
Licensing is a term they use, to be specific.
Sure. Not technologically, but design-wise, I'm kind of wondering, are they going to make this worthwhile? Because remember that they designed the Wii remotes to have internal memory.
They did.
Mm-hmm. It did, yeah. It still does. And on the Wii, you could basically...
They took them out.
You could basically store a Mii, or you could store maybe a dozen Miis on a Wii remote.
Yeah, I think it was like 10. That.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and I used that feature one time.
There was
another feature of that. I remember in Super Smash Bros. Brawl, you can save a custom control setup to the Wii remote.
Right. Oh yeah.
Oh, weird.
And you could bring your Wii remote to like your friend's house or something, and hook up your controller to their Wii system, and you can export your kind of like player data, like your initials and the control scheme and stuff.
How the hell did they do that?
I guess no one really discovered this feature because they all brought their Wavebirds.
I was the only insane person that was able to play that game just using the Wii remote.
Oof.
Oh wow, that's hardcore.
I respect your initiative.
Yeah,
indeed. It's now your thing. You're that guy. The guy who plays with the Wii remote.
Yeah, you're that asshole who plays Smash Brothers with the Wii remote. So. Yeah, I mean, the NFC figurines, we can talk about them real quickly. I don't understand their purpose. I mean, presumably they could put game content on there. They could be real insidious and make it one-time use game content that once you do it, you can't sell the figurine on eBay for reuse.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how... I mean, Skylanders did well for Activision. It did very well for Activision. But this ain't Skylanders.
I mean, I think you're underestimating the power of Nintendo collectibles. I mean, people have been buying up all kinds of ludicrously overpriced.
I mentioned that in the intro.
Yeah, but I think you're even underestimating it even at this point because, I mean, think about when Nintendo released all of the Game Boy Advance, all the NES Classics games.
People ate those things up,
and they were the biggest ripoff ever.
Those were like old, crappy NES games.
Yeah.
Yeah, like all the Black Box games.
Yeah, all those Black Box games, and that was the biggest ripoff.
Hey, guys, remember when Metroid was garbage? Guess what? Here it is. Even though we just remade this game in a much better way.
Yeah, and I mean, this is going to be a cash cow for Nintendo, and that's why they're doing it.
But, I mean, what can they do to incentivize you to buy it? I mean, what does this thing have to do besides be a statue? Because they already make statues. What's special here?
Well, I guess if you want to be cynical, you could always make it so that certain games don't work without them. So, boom, you just sold at least one statue.
Oh, so you just Disney Infinity'd this bitch is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I don't see really another way.
So it's gonna be like in the old PC days where you had to look up like certain codes in the instruction manual.
Oh no, it's gonna be like the serial port dongle days of the old PC where you had to plug this thing into the back of your computer.
Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, this is the company that brought us Rob the Robot, right? So, I mean, you can kind of see where they're gonna go with this, or where they could go, or where they have gone with this kind of thing.
The novelty of Rob the Robot was that it moved in sync with the game. The novelty here is that it stands on the controller you're trying to use.
The games I've designed around this, do you think that we'll be using like a separate controller for this stuff, or it's just like you just tap it on the gamepad and go?
Yeah, I think it's just a quick tap and you're done.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise you'd have to maintain connection, an IR-based connection to your 3DS with the port they're going to release for that, and that is impossible.
Yeah.
They could have something like, they could have some sort of thing like where you could carry around a collection. They could do something like some sort of Pokemon type battling game where you could carry around, you know, you could have one of these figurines or whatever, you know, have your whole collection of monsters, and you could go over to somebody's house and just tap on their Wii U and have them fight in a battle arena. You could do stuff like that.
They've already done the Pokemon Rumble U, which is not dissimilar to this. I mean, it's these little NFC figurines that you put on the Wii U gamepad. I mean, but I've never actually seen Pokemon Rumble figurines in stores.
Yeah.
Anybody have any experience with it?
Nope. Not at all.
No, I was trying to find out exactly how they're used. Isn't it just that if you don't have them, then you can't level up your characters?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think it's something like the ones you scan are stronger than the ones that you just get in game.
See, that's kind of crappy. It's exactly
no, it's incredibly crappy. Mm-hmm. And I think they only released like 12 or 18 of them, and then maybe they had some weird like special ones. I don't know.
They were in the blind packs or whatever they're called.
Woo, so, blind bag.
Oh, they were in blind bags, really?
Yeah,
that's really annoying. Yeah,
that's super evil. This sounds different though. This sounds like a much. This sounds like this Pokemon thing may have been an experiment for this. Because they're talking about how figurines will be compatible with multiple games, compatible across platforms between Wii U and 3DS. I guess the question I have is, do we think they're going to release Skylanders/Disney Infinity level of reliance on figurine game? A game that is so, where the figurines are that intrinsic? Or is this just going to be some extra bonus thing you can throw on there like the e-card reader was for Animal Crossing on GameCube?
I think they're going to do it both ways. I think they're going to have a game that uses them specifically and then have them incorporated into other games.
Oh, so they can try to sell you. Well, I've already bought the figurines. I may as well buy the game.
Exactly.
Yep. Or I've already got these figurines. Maybe I should buy this other game that also uses them.
Yeah, well, because you know people are just going to buy the figurines just to collect all of them.
Yep.
Right? And so Nintendo knows that's going to happen, so they're going to want to tie people into probably a bigger universe of some sort.
So I will say that we're going to have answers to this pretty soon, because their plan is to launch this thing, at least the Wii U version of it, by the end of the year. Which leads me to wonder if this thing is going to be real full-featured to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But we spent a bit of time on this. I want to speak more broadly in terms of licensing. Now, the first response people had when Nintendo mentioned licensing was they were, oh my god, they're going to license their characters. They came back later and were super clear. We still make our games. So they aren't licensing their character for game development. But is there anything that jumps out at you as an obvious licensing thing where you think they're going to go with this? Because I spent some time with it after we wrote this article, and I was really struggling to come up with something that they aren't already exploiting.
They no longer make breakfast cereal, do they? Like, there is no longer any Mario Brothers breakfast cereal.
Power breakfast system?
Yeah.
But the whole cereal system?
The whole brand.
Awesome.
God.
I know, maybe they were hinting at that in the Mario Kart 8 Direct. That guy was eating, Donkey Kong cereal?
Oh, those were dark days.
Yeah. See, they need to do stuff like that again. That stuff is awesome. I mean, every once in a while, I'd buy that stuff. I'd like, I'm going to buy myself a Nintendo cereal system. You know?
Jesus Christ.
Keep my onesie jammies on and just sit there and, you know, play.
Oh, your footsie pajamas?
My footsie jammies.
Your Mario
and,
footy pajamas? Yeah. You know? They pretty well licensed themselves as it is. This particular statement from them has always sort of put me in a weird, like, I don't know what you're trying to tell me, Nintendo.
Yeah.
I mean, what I kind of gathered was, like, maybe they're trying to branch more into, like, the field of, like, entertainment again, like TV shows and movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And the only TV show they have at the moment is the one that the Pokemon Company
yeah.
sort of runs shop on. The 8 Pokemon TV shows that are on the air in Japan.
I'm kind of wondering, again, like with the NFC thing and the licensing. The thing is, okay, Nintendo has a lot of classic characters, but they've kind of been unwilling to create new ones outside of Pokemon's. So I'm kind of wondering, because the thing that all these kind of fads that the kids, that reach the kids these days, like, they're all new stuff, and they're all, like, collect them all, and they're all, like, trash pack or trash, I can't remember, or, you know, Monster High or things like that. Like, they're all new properties, and they all want you to collect everything. And in the case of Skylanders, like, okay, so now there's a new line of toys, and these ones you can separate in two, and you can mix and match and stuff like that. Right. I'm kind of thinking you can't sell. I don't think that Nintendo could get away with selling Mario in different poses, and like even like Mario and then Mario in a cart would be pushing it. You know, Mario with a tennis racket. I think they'd really have to push that further, and I don't know. I feel like the Mario figurines would probably sell a lot to collectors, as we've mentioned, and probably older people, but I don't see them just blowing up with the kids the way that these other things do. You know, there's not enough of a collecting aspect, and that seems to be what addicts, gets those kids addicted, you know?
Right. It just, I mean, unless they're going to release every shade of Toad.
Yeah. I mean, also, the kids that really didn't play those games back when they were really popular, they might not resonate as well with them.
Right.
You know, because it's not totally something that they're, it's not totally new, so they may not be as interested.
Well, I'm always, you know, I don't hang out in stores that much at all, like any kind of store, but when I do, like, I'm always surprised by the number of Mario things that you can find, like the toys and the candy and all of that stuff. So that's all very present, and I'm assuming that some kids are, you know, like asking
for them. besides our staff is buying these things.
Yeah. Like, there has to be people buying that stuff. So, and Mario is, it's not like kids don't know who he is at all, but
yeah,
he can't carry a whole lineup of NFC's figurines by himself.
Yeah.
I wonder, let's say they say, all right, you can make, I mean, like, who would they be willing to, I mean, they can make, I don't think they'd let anybody make characters for them, because that leads to Waluigi, who they apparently hate.
Yeah, but they could certainly go into partnerships with other companies, you know.
Yeah.
You could have, I mean, as like, say, like a pre-order item for the next Soul Calibur, you could have a special Soul Calibur version.
Spawn. You get Spawn with it.
Well, you could have a special, you know, Soul Calibur version of Link, you know, as this trophy. And the only way to get it is if you pre-order the game.
Ooh.
You know? I mean, stuff like that. That stuff is just, it's just nasty. I mean, that's just pulling pulling money out of people's pockets.
So to the licensing question one more time. I know the figurines are so deliciously just you can get real insidious with them. I mean, you can get or you can get real insane. To straight licensing. All right, let's just go through the things they've licensed in the past they aren't doing, and we'll talk about it. Would they let somebody make a Mario cartoon?
They seem to go for the to let the smaller franchises be developed into anime, like Kirby is actually pretty big, but you know there was a Kirby anime that was F-Zero,
which is good. It's shocked that the Kirby one is shockingly good.
And there was F-Zero, and that was not so good, but you know, like,
shockingly ridiculous.
Yeah,
they tried.
So I'm picturing something like Punch Out, perhaps.
Oh,
you know that would be perfect for it.
Oh, you could make a shonen out of that. And
yeah, exactly.
I mean, essentially, there already is. It's Hajime no Ippo.
Yeah, I was about to mention that one, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, jeez. Yeah, that's actually real evil. Because then you could... There are already characters they can make toys for. There's lots of them. Because there's all the characters he's beaten up over the years. They could introduce new characters and make new toys, and then they could roll that into a new Punch-Out game with those new characters. Ooh. So this is where the licensing starts to become self-perpetuating. So you have a situation where you have an established cast of characters from the games, and then you flesh them out with the TV series. Those generate their own merchandising toys to go with the TV series. And then eventually those characters bleed their way back into a game that's kind of this weird the TV show The Game of the original game. And we saw it with F-Zero, where we had F-Zero, the TV show, The Game.
Right.
And F-Zero, the TV show, The Game, the sequel.
Climax.
Yeah. Punch-Out's really good, Guillaume. That's really
yeah,
good.
I gotta admit, that would be, like, perfect fit.
Like, Kid Icarus is the obvious one, because they've just started to re-tinker with that franchise. But
True, and they had an animated short, you know?
Yeah, they had
Nintendo
a few
radio.
Animated shorts on Nintendo
yeah,
Video.
Yeah, I mean, they had Production IG make them, which is expensive. But I don't think Pitt's a good character. I mean, like, artistically, he just looks kind of lame. I mean, and that's part of the point. He looks kind of lame. Like that's part of the story here is that, you know, they're not worried about him because, I mean, look at that dude. Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do it. So we're all in agreement that TV shows, yes, but maybe not their bread and butter brands.
Possibly not. Yeah. I mean, it's tough to say.
I mean, like, I can't see them signing off on a Legend of Zelda TV show.
Yeah.
Oh, not after that first one.
Yeah.
What about movies? Movies are a different beast.
Yeah, I mean there have been like kind of recent like movies based on Nintendo franchises. Like there's a one based on Animal Crossing and there was a couple Professor Layton movies, right?
Yeah, but they don't own Layton.
Oh, I could have sworn they did.
No, that's Level 5. Okay. They just
I know Level 5
West.
Makes them. I just wasn't sure if
yeah, Level 5 owns them.
Oh, okay. I do remember.
That's a good movie too.
Yeah, yeah. I do remember a while ago, the director of Wreck-It Ralph was talking about like a potential sequel, and he wanted to give Mario like a way bigger role, and like if they ever did a sequel. And now there's a sequel coming out, so I wonder if they're like in talks with Nintendo to kind of put him in a bigger role in that.
Yeah, I mean that would definitely be a change because Nintendo's historically just really conservative about anything that they do with those franchises.
Right.
You know, they don't want them misinterpreted or anything like that. They're extremely protective of them. So,
which they have to be because it's their primary economic model.
Yeah.
Mm. The thing with movies is that they never seem to pan out, though.
No, like, movies are tricky.
Very.
Yeah.
Few,
the only survivor, like the only thing that keeps going inexplicably, is the Resident Evil movies, and that seems to be just because people will pay to see Mila Jovovich get almost naked. And that's basically,
I don't pay to see that.
And it's a horror genre, right? Which is sort of, I would say the horror genre is fairly quality proof.
Right.
Yeah.
People like those
fact,
movies almost
fact,
as a joke.
It's quality averse, I would say.
Yeah. It's people like almost like it, like the movie, the worse it is.
Yeah. Right. So and you've got so many very, very popular brands that seem to have been in development hell for way too long, you know, like the World of Warcraft movie. That never panned out.
It's actually good. It's on now. It'll be out in 2015, I think.
What?
They just wrapped filming on it. Just FYI. So it did actually get done.
But it'll be released after they shut down World of Warcraft because no one's playing it.
Yeah, no, it's going to release like right at the height of its popularity. They're really good timing.
Yeah, that movie should have been out like 4 years ago.
Dude, like 7 million people play World of Warcraft.
Right. There
FYI.
Was the Halo
Just
movie,
saying.
And there was the, I don't know, all these projects that never seem to come out. So I don't know how lucrative they can have been for Blizzard and all those other publishers. But I don't know. It seems to me like when the deal falls through at some point, they probably
money. You've already got your upfronts covered. So that's the dirty part of this whole thing. Is that the license holder gets paid if the movie makes it to production or not. They got paid when they signed on.
Right.
So maybe they silently hope the movie doesn't go live, and they're just like, yes, get to keep that money. So we think movies sound a little bit sketchier. I think TV shows are just easier to pull off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think because the production budgets are so much lower. I mean, you couldn't make a movie based on that Kirby anime.
Yeah, and you can also ditch. Easily.
Yeah, you can ditch a TV show two episodes in.
Yep.
And be okay. And if odds are whatever they make TV show wise will probably be Japan in origin. Mm-hmm. And it's a fairly forgiving marketplace.
Yep.
So I mean maybe they pull that off. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but like comics, I think that's a no brainer.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, especially in Japan, I think that's a gimme. Oh, they already make toys and stuff, so I'm not sure there's anything left they can do there.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly more they could do, but I mean, they're already that's not a market that they aren't in.
Lego kits.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen that with there's actually some pretty surprising brands in that space. Halo.
Yep.
Call of Duty is in there. Like you can, I mean,
they had a deal with Kinects to make these Mario Kart things, but
yep,
that ain't Lego.
That would actually be great.
What about? I think crossovers is probably the most. I mean, they've done it. They still do it some. I wonder if they'd be more willing to do it now. But see, that would require the games come out on their system, which means they'd have to get devs who are going to make the game for their system. So it's sort of this circle of, all right, we want you to make the game. Here, you can use our characters to make the game possibly successful. Oh, why don't we just make the game ourselves? And I don't know how it gets them more opportunity. It's a tricky situation for them to be in on the video game front. And it also runs the risk of diluting their own brand. Not that they haven't done that themselves.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know.
Maybe I was thinking maybe they could do what they did near the end of like the GameCube's lifespan, where they just started putting Mario in NBA Street and
but those games aren't coming out on Wii U right now. That's the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
That incentivized some publisher to do that, but right now they're not coming.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. Is like maybe they like these third party publishers don't think their games will sell. So like you know maybe Nintendo can offer some incentives. Like maybe we could let you put our characters in our your games, and you know that'll give some incentive for Wii U owners to actually buy those versions of the game.
I don't know. It is very curious. So I'll wrap this up real quick. Just yes, no. Do we see licensing deals announced at E3 this year?
No.
I'm going to say yes.
Yes?
Yes. I'm going to say no.
Fair enough.
They just take so much time to do anything. They announce stuff, and then it just takes so long to go through. So.
Yeah. I just don't think they would use E3 as a platform for that. They can announce that anytime.
Well, considering that those weren't yes or no answers, people, I'm gonna have to take over the segment. And actually, I'm gonna go off the rails.
Uh oh.
Because we're talking about E3 already, and I don't think we've spoken on this show about Nintendo's E3 plans announcements. Besides the fact they're gonna have that Smash Brothers thing.
Yeah.
Real quick, again, because somebody may listen to this in the future for some reason. Nintendo, for the second year in a row, has announced they're not going to be staging a press conference, a traditional press conference, before E3, which means they're not going to be using the Nokia Theater to, you know, bring Reggie on stage to read from a teleprompter that's right behind you, that's like five lines ahead, so you can find out what he's going to announce before he announces it. we're not going to get a bad demo of a game because everybody's portable Wi-Fi is screwing with the controllers. They're going to do... It sounds like they're going to do what they did last year with kind of like a Nintendo Direct. They're going to do a more press-oriented event at their booth at a later date. And then they're going to do this Smash Brothers tournament in the Club Nokia Theater. Whatever. They're going to call it something like, People Who Ruined the Game Here Today, Smash Brothers.
Oh, James.
But I'm going to stake out a controversial position that is in contradiction to what we have said in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not asking you all to react to this position. I'm asking you to react to the news. But I'm hosting, so I'm going to go first. In the past, on this show, we have said they would be stupid to not do a press conference. And I thought about it. And this isn't me equivocating here. I actually thought about it before they announced it and said, yes, I know what I'm doing. In a way, this kind of makes sense. Because... They get to control their message again. They get to deliver it in the most straightforward and potentially error-free way possible. And also, with the exception of me, Kurt, are you going to E3 this year?
I am not.
I would be the only person on this podcast who would be there. And 99.9, many, many, many nines later... percent of the people watching at home are going to have effectively the same experience I had. will be having the same experience that they will be having anyway. Except it won't be live, so there won't be on, like, Spike TV. So Jeff Keighley's not going to come in and talk before it. Besides that, I mean, it's really the same experience. It's got to be a hell. It's got to be a hell of a lot cheaper than running out that theater.
So do we know that it's like not live?
It would be dumb to do it live and not do it on stage.
Because I remember like when they first announced like the official like launch details of the Wii U, it was like kind of a smaller kind of press event, and it was like yeah they like streamed that. So I'm wondering if they're going to do something similar for this.
So they did that weird Nintendo Direct before E3 where they had, that was the generic hero thing.
Yeah.
That was not live.
Yeah, I mean, from what I recall, isn't it going to be, it's going to be a, like a pre-recorded announcement, and then they're going to have live game demos?
Yes.
Oh, so, I was talking about the one in September that they did later.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think this one will be live. But I think they did that because they wanted to do it in all time zones at the same time, and they wanted to just be, they wanted to try to make it seem like a major event. You're right. That one was live, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't think it may have been live in every territory, though. I think Shibata's may have been recorded.
Yeah, I remember it being live and seeing Reggie's just depressed face as the guy was talking about Nintendo TV.
Yeah, that's right. Because they couldn't edit it out. His laconic demeanor. I think ultimately for them, there is a little bit of loss of, you know, people getting real amped, but they're still going to have us press, maybe a smaller portion of us. So maybe not everybody in the NWR entourage gets to go. They're still going to have us at an event where we're going to hear the Treehouse people, actually, which makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of really talented people who deeply know these games at Treehouse, who their job is to communicate for a living.
Yeah, they could probably demo them really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and like I said, their job is literally to communicate. They take text and make it in a way that makes sense for English speakers. So we're still going to be kind of amped from that.
Yeah.
I know we said this was a dumb idea, but gentlemen, is this really a big deal?
Well, the only issue that I can see with it is if they don't have their technical stuff up to par, just like they did last year. Like that was the only problem.
Yeah,
they were trying to control it a little bit too much, and they was it like Twitch exclusive or I don't know. Like
it was, it was Ustream.
It was Ustream. So yeah. they're going and through Twitch this time, work. And Twitch regularly supports huge numbers of streams.
Mm-hmm. And the last couple of live directs, the last couple Nintendo directs they did when they were streaming them live was they were streaming them via YouTube as well. So
yeah,
right. But the thing is, those were lesser directs. I think that were they actually streamed? Because like, could you not?
Yeah, they were the
jump ahead.
It was the Smash Brothers one, and
it was YouTube live.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the one before that, where they announced Little Mac and Punch Out.
You could jump ahead if you ended up on the stream late, and sometimes it would just start you. It wouldn't start you exactly where they were.
Yeah,
right.
And you could kind of advance up to the point they were. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it sounds like they're going to use Twitch this time, and Twitch regularly supports much bigger crowds than Ustream does.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, I really don't see a problem with that then, because every E3 conference, not just Nintendo ones, but like EA and Ubisoft, like you're just sitting in a theater waiting for them to get to the point. And I don't know. It's really not the best way to experience like game footage, even, or having someone explain to you what the game is. And Nintendo in particular, they have the extra hurdle of having to translate everything or to have their people speak in broken English, which is not ideal. So it's much more easier to manage when it's video and they can use subtitles or they can, they've
or
got
they
a lot more options.
Or they could just let Iwata do extra takes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because Iwata speaks English well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he does fumble it occasionally. Mm-hmm. And that historically they've been letting, more recently they've been letting Bill Trennan and Nate Bierdorf on stage to speak on behalf of Japanese speakers.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, really those press conferences are exactly that. They're for the press, and Nintendo really could care less about catering to the press.
Right.
So,
but they really weren't for the press anymore. I think that's part of the problem is they had become this, this just dick waving contest.
Well, but that's the thing, though. The press loves it. The press loves.
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Like there's that kind of outreach element to it, like making good with the press, like. You know,
but
like,
still, hey guys,
here's a big group hug in the form of our press conference. We love you.
But they're still doing that press thing in their booth.
Yeah, but the press likes to be catered to. You know how it is. I mean, it's not a secret.
I've been there. So, John, what was the last E3 press conference you went to?
Probably 2005, I think. It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
Dude. So the last EA press conference I went to, it was Ubisoft. It was that weird multi-person shooter they did. It was like
the laser tag one.
No. Oh God, I was there for that. No, that's not what I'm talking about. No, it was a first-person shooter for PC, kind of like a Battlefield they were going to make. I don't even remember if it came out. But the way they demoed it was they had a desk descend from a counter descend from the ceiling with like 26 PCs on them, and then people rolled up in chairs and played it.
What?
I mean, that's not a press conference. That's just like, look at this dumb shit we can do.
It's a Disneyland show.
It is. It's exactly what it is. And I wonder, maybe we don't need this garbage. I mean,
yeah, it's just I feel like press conferences still exist because, you know, it's just the way it's always been done to get information out to the people that will print it out.
Go watch some of the old press conferences. They're nothing like this.
Well, that's the thing. It's a circus that's more for – it's more to grab
– so the Kinect announcement press conference was literally a circus.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's more – that stuff is more
it
to –
it was Cirque du Soleil.
It's more to grab headlines on, you know, CNN.com and USA Today than actually put anything on display, really.
But you know, I say this. I say, oh, this doesn't matter. They don't need to do this. But I secretly kind of want them to.
I feel
dirty saying it, but I kind of want them to shoot Mario's out of a cannon into the crowd, and then it rains down. It rains down confetti in the form of Bowser, while I don't know, Miyamoto comes out of stage shaped like a warp pipe.
Yeah, it's like I'm never gonna. Part of me like, is probably
I,
not.
I feel like ever. I feel like they started doing kind of this like circusy kind of stuff because. You know, the rise of like internet streaming became so prevalent that they just wanted to give people a reason to actually go to the press conference rather than just like watch it online.
But I think it was more they did it to make the online stream more attractive because they're like, well, people can just read what happened, but what if we make it a big dumb spectacle? We can control the messaging because people will see it directly from us.
Yeah, part of it too. I feel like it's kind of a show of strength, and Nintendo by comparison comes off looking kind of anemic.
Right. I mean, they're not going to do the
regardless of whether that's true perception wise. It makes them look like
yeah. I mean, you go to an Ubisoft one, and while it is interminable, I imagine when I go to Purgatory after I die, it'll be 1,000 years of Ubisoft press conferences.
yeah.
But I mean, it's slick. It's very slick.
Yeah.
The EA ones make the Ubisoft ones look like amateur garbage. They're like somebody's trying to sell you a $1 million house.
Yep.
With dubstep, exclusively.
But yeah, I mean, it's funny that it's funny that third parties have more lavish productions than Nintendo does. You know,
they do.
Just in the scope of things. I mean, Nintendo eats those companies for lunch, and
Microsoft and Sony do as well.
It's sitting there like you know with like pre-recorded streams of a guy in a black suit and. You know,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just sort of like
at the end of the day, will that really change your opinion of E3? Like, who won or who got the best games? Because as lavish as EA can make their presentations, I don't know. It just fell so flat to me, and I was there.
No, I think it does matter to an extent because I think for whatever reason, we're all dumb children who enjoy this big stupid spectacle. I mean, remember, a couple years ago, Nintendo created Nintendo Land on stage, and we all thought, wow, that's really dumb. But at the same time, it was kind of cool.
We're rooting for the winning team, you know?
It's not even that. It's just like, all right, that's stupid. And then I'm thinking about, like, that set was kind of cool.
It's like, I want to be entertained. at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's like and there's a certain sense of this morbid, like, I just want to see something real stupid.
Yeah, but you can still have that. Last year we had the whole freaking person, the staff of Nintendo, just with cat ears and cat paws. Like, they can still do that stuff.
Yeah, but that wasn't... I only remember that because I was embarrassed for you guys.
That's not inspiring.
I remember I got a text, and I can't remember who it was from, but I was on home team shift at that point. It just says, Nintendo staff has cat ears. What?
Yeah.
And I didn't respond to it. I just simply tweeted, I don't know what's going on at the Nintendo booth. On the Nintendo World Report Twitter account, I don't know what's going on in the Nintendo booth. Someone should send help. Because it doesn't make any sense. But, like, I'm kind of okay with this. And I feel like I'm being an adult by saying, you know what? I'm going to fly to LA. I'm going to do my job at E3. I'm going to get stuff done. I'm going to cover Nintendo stuff. And I'm not going to go get up at 6 in the morning, line up outside their LA Live, sit in a chair for an incredibly punctual press release as run by Nintendo, which thank them for that. Instead, I'm gonna wake up at the hotel, I'm gonna have some breakfast, and I'm gonna watch a live stream of events, and then I'm gonna go to E3 and do my job.
It's just so sanitary, though. That's what I don't like about it.
Like,
it's so
in LA right
fucking
now,
sanitary.
Do something, yeah.
Like, it's just like, such a snooze fest.
That's the kid in me going, come on, give me something stupid.
Yeah, it's like, for crying out loud, I mean,
why is
you
it
know,
not exploding?
It's like Nintendo. It's like you're at a bar, and they refuse to have a drink. And they're really cool to hang out with. But sometimes you're just like, man, let's just sit down here and do a couple of shots just once. Just once this year, Nintendo. Let's sit down and do some fireballs.
I gotta drive.
Let's just do it. Come on, buddy.
John, I gotta drive.
I can call a cab. I can call a cab, Nintendo. Let's just go do it.
I don't have the money.
Ugh. All right.
I live on the other side of town. It's expensive.
Fine. All right.
I've got work in the morning. I just can't.
All right. I mean.
I can't do it.
All right, Nintendo. All right. You sure? Because, I mean, I know the bartender. We can get cheap drinks.
No, it's not about the money. I got work.
I mean, the thing is, while I think what Nintendo does is effective to get its message out to its audience, it's not energizing its fan base in any way. That's the problem is.
But the games will energize the fan base, they won't. Like, that's either, or like, it's yes or no.
Yeah,
you know?
All right, so John, let's say they go out there, and they show a stream, and X looks goddamn amazing.
Uh-huh.
And they show Bayonetta 2, and it looks amazing. They show game that we don't know about, and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
That game won't be a Zelda game, because Hyrule Warriors is coming out, and that will cut its legs right off. But they show a game that looks amazing. They show Hyrule Warriors, and it looks not stupid.
Okay. Yep.
I'm setting a low bar for that game.
Yeah. I was gonna say, whoa, like that's a high order. Anyway.
Well, it's a Dynasty Warriors game. I mean, you've.
Yeah.
Like, if this was a joint with Sengoku Basara, I'd be way more excited. But you know, they go out there and they show us one game we don't know about, and we go, wow, that looks really cool. They show us two games we do know about, and we say, wow, that looks really cool. They show us a couple 3DS games, and we think, I need to have that game. Does it really matter what vector they used? Are you going to be any less excited?
Yes, I would be less excited. Not for the games, but there's no electricity there. It's like, there's no difference. Like, there's no difference from what they do for any of their Nintendo Directs, aside from the fact that they're showing better games.
Right.
It's the same. There's nothing different about that event.
I agree with that statement. But... you not being there regardless, you say you'd still be less energized.
I mean, as compared to being there live, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying being there live, obviously, you'll be less engaged.
Yeah.
Or be more engaged. But
yeah, it always is kind of fun to see, like, you know, hear people like clapping and cheering when they see, you know, a new trailer for like the new Donkey Kong Country or hell, even the new Zelda back in 2004.
Hey, like, you know, the crowd went nuts when the Other M trailer got revealed.
That's the thing.
I'm just gonna say that right now. I was there. They went crazy.
It's like watching like a live football game that's happening right in front of you as opposed to one that's been pre-recorded that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's kind of canned. It's just sort of like,
well, it is. It's very sterile.
Yeah, it's fun to watch, but you know, it's not like being there.
There's no spontaneity.
Yeah, exactly. you know?
But I mean, yeah, being there obviously, I mean...
Or even watching live, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
being,
is a better...
Being there is just, it's a different experience. Like, you yeah. get excited, but at the same time, you're kind of in this weird, like, okay, they're going to announce stuff, and then I need to immediately make a breakneck run for the media room.
Yeah.
And stab anyone who gets in my way.
I mean, part of the enjoyment of watching, you know, these E3 press conferences is seeing how the live crowd reacts. You know,
yeah.
Because, well, I mean, I know that on
so
Twitter.
So you're thinking about the Sony ones that we've live tweeted about.
Yes,
right?
Yes, you know it. That when we live tweet the Sony ones and they show something like Wonderbook that is just.
For like
that
25
sucks.
Minutes.
Yeah, it's just sitting there and you're watching you're live as all of the air is sucked out of that room.
Or when you can hear their pumping and clapping.
Yeah,
yes.
Like that's priceless stuff. You know?
Yeah, it is. I mean,
and you miss that with a live stream or like a with
and I will
a, with
say
a
that of the press conferences I go to, like theirs was the best managed. It was short. Mm-hmm. It was on time. It was at a time that wasn't inconvenient. It was, you know, it was punchy. It was good to get through. And the press kits came out right afterwards, and you felt like everything went great.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not the 3-hour Sony megathons.
Yeah.
Yep. Or the infamous Konami disaster cast.
Oh, yeah. I just watched the highlight reel.
I went to two of those, by the way. They're nuts.
But see, that's my point, though, right? Like, that's the kind of stuff.
Yeah,
even when it's horrible, it sticks with you more than some random
that's
Nintendo Direct.
That's a great example. I don't remember anything from the Konami, the ones they've streamed, the 2 years they've streamed them, or 3 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the only memorable parts of those were like the Mega 64 videos.
Mm-hmm.
I remember second to second every Konami press event I attended.
Yeah, and even like
they are disasters.
Even the bad Nintendo press conferences, like where they were showing off like Pac-Man Versus and stuff like that. Like those are the kind of things that like, you remember that stuff. It's memorable. You know, I don't remember mm-hmm. what the heck they announced at the last E3 for their Nintendo Direct. I can't even remember
because they announced Mario 3D World.
I mean, there's just no. Because that's the thing. Because it has the same feel as any of their other Nintendo Directs. It's just the content is different.
Yeah,
the feature set. It. I don't know. Like the.
So I'm gonna go around the room. Then my brain tells me it doesn't matter. It's you know it's materially the same. But my heart's like John's 100% in the. It's just not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, where you at?
I usually watch the videos of E3 presentations after the fact anyway because,
so you
know, I have to work.
Do you know the news at the time? Or just...
Yeah, usually, you know, the news trickle and stuff like that, okay. But I still watch a presentation sometimes. I used to never watch it at all. I think only in the last couple of years I started doing that, and then I actually went to E3. So yeah, I don't really care about the presentation at all. I never really did. And I find that when you watch it after the fact, they cut out a lot of the audience reaction anyway. Like, I don't remember seeing, like, sure, okay, like, the people crying when they saw the Zelda trailer or whatever. I heard about that. And I didn't even see it for myself.
Apocryphal.
but then, you know, like...
Yes, there is footage of E3 2005 of John Lindemann crying when they showed Twilight.
Hey, it was just one man. It was one manly tear.
But, yeah, like, the stuff that you will watch on Nintendo's YouTube channel or that you can watch on the eShop, they're gonna cut out all that stuff. Or, usually it's pretty much focused on the presentation itself. So, you know, I think that either way, you don't really get that much audience reaction unless you are the audience, you know? Like, yeah. You're in there and you're seeing it live.
That's where my head is.
Yeah.
Not mm-hmm. where my heart is. Kurt, where you at?
You know what? I do kind of miss, like, the live press conferences, but you know what? When I watched that Nintendo Direct last year during E3, I was still, like, really excited to watch it. You know, I still got hyped up for a lot of the games they showed off, and, like, that feeling didn't really, like, dissipate by them not having a press conference. So it's just, like, you know... It's not the end of the world if they don't have one. I mean, the information still gets out there. It's still, like, really popular, and people will always tune in for them, so, yeah.
So basically what we've learned today is that John Lindemann is going to miss Jeff Keighley.
I am.
Yeah.
Okay.
I cannot deny it.
That's fine. I mean, as long as you're open with us and with yourself, it's okay.
Jeff Keighley is my heart.
All right, so I think that's going to do it for this week. It's time to get some, well, that's going to do it for this topic, and in fact, for the show. So, plugs. So, Kurt, You got a weekly show coming up. Why don't you tell the audience about it?
All right. It's called Nintendo Weekend Report. It's going to be airing every Saturday afternoon. I have not figured out the time yet. It depends on how long it takes me to actually put the show together. But I'm going to try and aim for maybe like 5 or 6 o'clock Eastern time. It's going to go up on the NWR YouTube channel. It's going to have a post on the site as well. I was thinking that maybe I could do like a live stream of it before I upload it. So it's just like, if you guys want to watch that, it'll be, I might be streaming it on the NWR Twitch channel. So that'll be twitch.tv/Nintendo World Report. So hopefully, so I just bought a green screen kit with a bunch of lights and.
Oh no.
Oh, whoa.
So I'm going to
awesome. Oh no.
Yeah. So I'm going to be having a lot of fun with that. So hopefully everybody enjoys it. There's a trailer.
You could really do some stupid stuff with that, by the way. I hope you maximize that.
Oh, I am.
The potential of that is unlimited.
Oh, I'm going to turn that up to 11, baby.
Please tell me you own a Mario costume.
I have the Club Nintendo Mario hat. So that's
pretty much. Oh, so you got to make the rest.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, that's going to hopefully be going up every Saturday afternoon. I'm going to try and get get the Twitch channel back up and running again. I miss doing Backlog with Kurt Dog. I kind of took a break from the site during April because of some personal issues, but I'm ready to get back into the swing of things. So expect more Backlog with Kurt Dog streams. I'm going to be streaming a lot of Wii U games, and I'm currently in the process of getting a 3DS capture board installed in my 3DS XL, so I'd like to stream some 3DS games as well. So,
Whoa. So
I mean, it's kind of an expensive investment since Nintendo doesn't really sell them commercially. So,
I didn't even realize you could get one installed.
What was that?
I didn't realize you could get such a product.
Oh yeah, it's there's a couple of websites that do it. I have like there was one dude that did it from Utah, and he only does it on like the normal 3DS models, and he's like kind of. Was overwhelmed with orders right now, and the one I'm looking at with the 3DS XL, I have to send it over to Japan to get it done.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so I'm still kind of deciding whether or not it's going to be worth it, but I feel like it will. I'd love to produce more video content, especially with Tomodachi Life coming out pretty soon. I would love to get it. I would love to do some really fun live stuff with that. So yeah. Nintendo Weekend Report, Backlog with Kurt Dog on the Twitch channel, and you can follow me on Twitter at Curtis Bonds. You can get all my updates about anything regarding the site or just, you know, my personal life, kind of complaining about coworkers and whatnot.
By name? How about you do it by name?
What was that?
I said, do you do it by name?
No, not really. I would like to keep the guy that's stuck in 8th grade edgy Satanist mentality nameless.
So, I do have a plug of sorts. More details to come. We are planning to produce live video content from E3 this year. I just got clearance from Neil that I will be allowed to work on that. Details are pending, but hopefully that will be, we'll call it at least semi-professional and at least partially watchable. Possibly every night of E3, God help us. More details will come on that as they begin to flesh out. But again, it will hopefully be on the Nintendo World Report Twitch account. Or it'll be on YouTube after the fact because hotel internet is garbage. We'll see. Like I said, I'll have more details as the show rolls on. I wanted to just get it out there ahead of time so people can start watching or at least be aware of it, so by the time E3 rolls around in, like, 3 weeks now, I guess? It's real tight at this point. People will know it's there. Cool. Actually, since Curtis got a Twitter plug in there, we haven't done one in a while.
Mr. Diamond J, MrDiamondJ, letter J.
Guillaume, NWR.
And I am NWR_James. And, of course, as I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, we need your email. Otherwise, you will get another segment like this, and it will be your own fault. You can send your email, especially your E3 questions, because, again, E3 is coming up, to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And hopefully we will have more questions next week that we can go through, and Hopefully they'll be E3 related. Hint, hint. Send us some freaking E3 questions. And like I said, next week or week after, we'll be doing our predictions. So stay tuned for that. And I think that will do it for us. Curtis, thanks for being here.
Oh, no problem. Anytime. Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Bye. Later.
Bye. I mean, you did kind of give me an idea earlier, James, when you were talking about, like, you know, getting different shades of toads. That gave me an idea of that combined with, like, coming up with, like, an original franchise, you know, that's kind of focusing on collecting them all. Got an idea for the Toad Warriors.
Oh, God.
It's just
the sequel to Hyrule Warriors. We just play as Toad.
Maybe. I was thinking along lines of, like, Skylanders and what that did with, like, kind of the Spyro characters and stuff and all those dragons and stuff. What if they just made just a bunch of just badass, like, just mushroom characters?
Burly asshole toads.
Exactly, yeah.
Ripped, like pain and gain ripped toads.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the toad template is just, like, kind of simple enough that you could just do so many things. You know, with their characters, like, you know, there's just toads running around all over the place in the games, and even in those old, like, crappy Deke cartoons, it's just like there are so many just different toads, and it's just like that would be a good kind of like an edgy toad reboot series that they could launch the
mature
toad NFC with. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm fairly confident that Nintendo will not do that. I'm just throwing that out there.
Come on, you don't want to see, like, you know, Toad after, you know, he's, you know, just gotten through with divorce number 3. You know, he has a couple of nasty habits, riding the white pony. I mean, come on.
Oh, my God. I'm thinking, like, The Rock from Pain and Gain. When he got so ripped, he was terrifying. But, you know, it's funny you mention the Toads. So it takes me back to... see if anybody remembers this game. The two DS classics, Touch Detective and Touch Detective 2.5. there's a incredibly minor supporting character, a pet living mushroom called Fungi, because he's a fun guy.
Oh,
get it?
God.
That all he does is he pops up in the level every so often and makes, like, little noises. And somehow or another, they monetize that character into this entire Nameka, which is fungus or mushroom in Japanese. This, like, brand that is enormous, much bigger than those games have ever been. And one of the ways they did it was by making thousands of variants and selling them in blind bags. And like this is the Pharaoh Nameka. They just painted him gold and put Pharaoh art in his face, and now he's a Pharaoh. They made one looks like a cat. Now it's Nameko Neko. Because fuck you, Japan, and your puns. I mean, this is just. Like, there is a path here that you started to walk us down as a joke that's actually super serious and could actually happen.